The following programming is sponsored by Clean and Sober Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
If you need immediate help, please call the National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio, brought to you in part by Jefferson University Hospitals and Thomas Jefferson University, providing excellent clinical and compassionate care in the Philadelphia region, a proven leader in healthcare and education since 1825. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Hendler and Mark Sigmund.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody, and thanks for joining us at Clean and Sober Radio. Clean and Sober Radio features real people with real stories about addictions to drugs and alcohol. Mark, what do you have this week in addiction news?
So, unbelievably, DoorDash will now deliver hemp, CBD, and THC products. It comes in response to a growing demand, what they say is to help customers relax and unwind. Customers in states that permit sale of hemp products will see a CBD THC tab on their app. DoorDash said that they decided that they would have this policy change partly because they did polling that shows the majority of adults 21 to age 65 are considering incorporating the cannabinoids into their routines. They also said that they're partnering with a company called Kano to offer a $2 discount for cannabis products. And again, this is in only states that have legal marijuana, but I guess it's getting easier to get, you know. Back in our day, it was a lot harder, wasn't it, Gary?
I find it so ridiculous, but yeah, the barn door is open.
It is.
It's only going to get worse.
Yeah, I was actually just talking to somebody today, and you know, a lot of cops now are smoking pot. That's really? What I'm hearing. Yes, that cops are smoking. And I was like, I just can't picture it after running so much from the police back in the day from using pot.
I got another story. San Francisco has started a ban on welfare for drug addicts who refuse treatment. And welfare checks in San Francisco is a $714 per month. $714 was the manufacturer's number on Quaalude.
I'm aware.
Bill Stauffer, who's here today, is shaking his head. What do you think about not allowing people to get their checks because they won't go on treatment?
So I don't know. I think this might be a really kind of a slippery slope area. Because I think what you're going to see is you're going to probably see more crime. You know, you're going to see people are going to, you know, need money even more and get more desperate, and they're going to end up, you know, committing crimes to get the money. I mean, that's just my take on it. I think this might motivate some people, but the vast majority of people that are in heavy addictions are just going to find other ways to get the money, probably illegal.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to take our first break in about a minute. Bill Stauffer is with us. He's the executive director of Pro-A, Pennsylvania Recovery Organization Alliance. He does incredible work in this state, and now he's doing a lot of stuff across the country. So when we come back, we're going to hear Bill's story. It'll be great. We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober
Radio. A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF now. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
What's happening? Brandon Novak here from Those Movies Jacks, or author of that addiction memoir, Dream Seller. Do me a favor and tune into Clean and Sober Radio with Gary Hendler.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, we're back. Clean and Sober Radio out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We're glad everybody's with us today. A couple things I want to say before we introduce our guest. If you're watching us on Facebook at Clean and Sober Radio, Let us know if you're making a comment where you are at the time when you're watching us. We want to know cities or states or what, however you want to identify yourself. The other thing is, and we mentioned each week, we're raising money. This is our fundraising time of the year. Please go to cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com and go to the PayPal button. If we don't get the money in, we are off the air. And if you enjoy the show, I don't think you want that to happen. So that's my story right now, okay?
Yeah, start a new year by giving a donation.
It makes you feel so good when you give.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, the more the merrier.
Yeah, and it also feels good when you get.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
Okay, good. All right, Bill Stauffer, thanks for joining us again. Hey, buddy, welcome to Clean and Sober Radio.
Good to see you
Bill.
Again.
You're an old friend of this show, a dear old friend of mine also.
Likewise.
And so let's get into a lot of stuff. I want to know about your childhood. I want to know where you're from. And I know that from where you have come, you have really, really done a beautiful job helping others, giving back. And Mark and I talk a lot about, you know, we got clean and we got sober just as you did. But giving back is the icing on the cake.
Absolutely. You know, and Bill, he's been on so many times on this show and has really told us about all how treatment is doing, in especially in the state of Pennsylvania. You know, but isn't it about giving back, Bill?
Absolutely. There's a lot of service element in all of it.
All right, so let's ask you this. You work tirelessly. I know. You're not the hardest working man in show business, but you're the hardest working man in the recovery movement. Is it getting better?
I think it's getting more complicated for a lot of reasons. Substance use, the substances are more severe. They're being used in different ways, and there are a lot of challenges. There's workforce challenges. We have very high turnover rates in our addiction treatment field, and it's complex. So I'd like to say it's getting better. I don't think I can.
Is this administration, we're not going to name names, doing more or less than the previous administration as far as understanding the problem and interested in being part of solving the problem?
I think, you know, because of some of the opioid settlement dollars and other monies come in, there's a lot more resources getting out in different ways. So I'll say this, that there are there's improvements in expanding recovery housing, there's improvements in expanding peer services, getting people back to work and things like that. I think we're not at a point where things are cohesive, where it all comes together. So, and part of that may also be the very, very high turnover rates, not only out in our service system, but within government.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, we have a million questions for you. You feel like you're in a line of fire?
Interrogation.
I saw that they moved the lights to... They're
not lights. They're not lights, okay? They're cameras and they're barrels.
I got Skittles here too, so...
You got Skittles.
These guys are all hooked up with candy.
Yeah, we got them good and sugared up.
Pretzels, candy, all this stuff. Yeah. Bill brought us all kinds of stuff.
Hey, let's talk about the medical marijuana situation in Pennsylvania. In Pennsylvania, you can get a medical marijuana card, but marijuana is not legal for recreational uses. Is that correct?
That's true, yes. There's movements to make it legal.
Of course. It's all about the money, I guess, you know. So what are you seeing – are we seeing more drug drivers? Are we seeing more inappropriate behaviors on the streets? What are we seeing with this, with the marijuana?
I haven't looked specifically at the Pennsylvania stats, but I know nationally that drug driving arrests are higher than alcohol-related arrests.
Really?
That increase. So we do have drug-related mortality for driving. So we're seeing a lot of harm that comes out of it. That is occurring.
Yeah.
And
people need to know that, you know, just because you have a medical marijuana card, at least in Pennsylvania – if you're pulled over and you're stoned, you're as good as if you were drunk.
And people are definitely impaired.
Definitely impaired. So medical marijuana, just for our listeners and viewers who maybe don't understand this, all medical marijuana has THC in it. Is that accurate?
There are CBD preparations that don't get you impaired.
There are. So what's besides alleviating pain? Why would somebody smoke it?
Yeah, I was just reading. There's a group of journalists in Pennsylvania, Spotlight PA, have done a lot of work on this, and I was just reading there that the number one reason to get a medical marijuana card is anxiety in Pennsylvania. So people are using it for anxiety. Now that sounds like it may work, but the one thing about drug use in general is that we develop tolerance to anything that you use, whether you end up with a problem or not. So the first couple times you use it, it's helping with anxiety, but you're using more and more and more. If you're using regularly, it stops helping with your anxiety, and you have to use it just to feel the level of anxiety that you did before you started using it. And beyond that, the potency of the current cannabis, if you use more of it, like if you eat a whole gummy rather than the prescribed one-third or whatever it is, yeah, you can feel a tremendous amount of anxiety. It would be like having 10 cups of coffee or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting too, because there really has not been, usually for, you know, medications and stuff, they put it through rigorous studies and everything. And with marijuana, they come up with all kinds of things like this helps with anxiety and all this. But there's not really studies to back it.
I remember being in Harrisburg
when
the, I'm not going to mention her name, said that they were using, there were no studies. Marijuana was a good thing to use to help people who were addicted to opioids.
Yeah, and I used to run into that where clients brought that up, and there was absolutely no medical background on that. Now, I could see in certain issues, pain issues. You know, I'd much rather see somebody who's on THC than that. But in general, what you see a lot of times is like, you know, eventually somebody just starts doing opiates again. You know, it's not enough.
Well, Mark, are you seeing this in your practice? People that have medical marijuana cards, they're still smoking dope, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, we run into it. Now, we're total abstinents, you know, our practice. Do run into some things.
And by the way, what practice? Who are you with now?
So I'm with the Pennsylvania Recovery Centers.
Oh,
right. Right in Philadelphia and Phoenixville and Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and offers recovery housing.
Everything.
Everything. It's a great program. Really, everybody's in it really to help people. I mean,
that's
as
fantastic.
Much as possible. And we do see it. And, you know, we try to work with people and things, but it really can complicate things, because a lot of people think, well, you know, I'm going to stop my drug of choice, but I'm going to keep smoking pot. And for the layperson, this sounds just fine, right? But when you get somebody to the level where they need treatment, you see that, like, they start smoking pot, then they're not going to meetings, then they're feeling disconnected. Then eventually, almost all of them end up returning back to their drug of choice.
Right, right.
And so you try to tell them total abstinence, and they've been kind of brainwashed with all this marijuana stuff.
If somebody's addicted, I'm asking both you guys, let's say they're addicted to some kind of opioid, and they also have a medical marijuana card. The facility that they're going into usually would allow them to continue using a drug that's prescribed to them outside of the facility?
If it's with marijuana?
My question is the same thing with medical marijuana? Can you start – well, in Pennsylvania, you can't smoke it, right? You can just chew it. Is that right or not?
Well, you know, the guys that are doing the marijuana in Pennsylvania, I believe they're smoking it, right, with the vapes and things like that,
the
medical. It's really dicey, because when you try to let somebody still do treatment that's doing the marijuana, they end up coming to group high. I mean, that's been my experience, because we're not just getting recreational, we're getting full-blown addicts here, you know, and they stop their opioids or what have you, and you know, if they're still smoking pot, like, you end up, and you could tell, you're like, this dude is fried.
Well, yesterday I spent the day at the Montgomery County Correctional Facility, and every time we're in there, the medical company that treats most of the prisons on the East Coast were there.
Yeah.
And I asked them the same question. I said, so Are you telling me that if somebody has a medical marijuana card, that can be transferred into the prison? And what do you think they said?
They said yes.
No, they didn't.
Because I'm getting it with probation officers that they're like, well, they need to get their medical marijuana card.
That's a big problem.
It's a big thing, yeah. And when you really search and you find the unmanageability, a lot of times they can start to see how marijuana affects their life. You know, there's a lot of denial there. But it has a lot of consequences for somebody that's abusing it, right? I mean, we all know that people that can smoke, just like maybe they can drink moderately, and it's probably not really harming them.
There's this thing, the Perpetuo principle, and it's something that says that 20% of the users use 80% of the product. So if you're selling a product, whether it's alcohol or cannabis, these are the people you want. This is your market.
Yeah.
So our people are their market. So I don't think any of us would disagree that there are people out there who can smoke cannabis fairly regularly, once in a while, and they're okay. That's not the population that the money is made off of. It's our people.
Yeah.
You know, so getting those cards to our people and having them use a lot is really what it's all about.
Yeah.
And when they can't afford to buy it from the pharmacy, they're buying on the street. So it doesn't even defeat street sales. Right? I mean, you probably see that too.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess what you're saying is like, do you feel like there's a concerted kind of effort by these companies that are saying, well, this is where we're going to make our money, is the people that are addicts?
No doubt about it.
No doubt about it.
In my mind, you're marketing to people who are heavy users, and the other market for any addictive drug is kids. Mm. I mean, think about Joe Camel. You know, when I was a kid, there was there's a Miller beer sign I remember this day where it said, if you're not 21, you can't drink Miller yet. And it was the most attractive looking billboard. And an adult could look at that and say, oh, it's a prevention message. No, it's taunting somebody under 21 to drink.
Yeah.
And so young brains are more susceptible to addiction. And these companies know that. So getting it out there, making their products colorful, things like that are what they want to do, even when it's denied.
If you're just joining us now, we have the pleasure of having our buddy Bill Stauffer is with us. And Bill is the executive director of the Pennsylvania Recovery Organization Alliance. And this is – Bill, would this be correct? You're – part of what you do, you're a watchdog on who and what is doing what, at least in Pennsylvania. And you respond to that. And so the organization, which Bill will talk about more, is really for the good of the people.
Well, you know, we want to see as many people get into recovery as possible. And here's what we all know at this table, and a lot of our listeners do out there too. When somebody gets into recovery, when I get into recovery, I stopped costing society a lot of money, and I started being productive. I started being a productive citizen.
Yeah.
So getting more Pennsylvanians or Americans into recovery makes a lot of sense. So when we see things that are getting in the way of that, we certainly do call attention to it because it's actually in the best interest of the public too.
That makes sense.
Absolutely.
It makes sense. We get, you know, during the week, we get people emailing us. Let's see what we got here. Justin T. from Macon, Georgia. By the way, we're on the air in Augusta, Georgia, which is pretty close to this. Why even bother doing a show like you do? Addiction is really not getting better, and it's probably getting worse. I do, however, enjoy the show.
Yeah, and I just, you know, what do you say to that one, Gary?
Well, he's right.
See, remember that metaphor about the starfish where they're walking down the beach and the kid throws a starfish into the ocean and they say, why bother? There's all these other starfish out here dying.
Yeah, yeah.
And it matters to that starfish. I mean, we can't save the world, but there's a lot of people around. Somebody helped me, right?
Right.
So helping the next person, like you said, when you started the show, it's about service.
Yeah. And you don't know how many people you've helped. We don't know how many people we have helped,
mm-hmm.
but we know we have helped. We haven't done the opposite, you know? Here's another one. Sally F. from Buffalo, New York. I find that listening to your show helps me feel that I am not alone. That's good.
That's awesome.
It is awesome, you know? Let's see what else we're doing here. You know, I sort of screwed up the I didn't mention the radio station. By the way, everybody, we are on, besides Philadelphia, it's WWDB, we're on WPEN 97.5 FM high def in Philly. We're also on WGAC in Augusta, Georgia, and we're also on WNBR in Tampa, Florida.
And we're waiting. But if you lose, don't ask no questions why. The only game you know is do or die.
Hard to understand, but a hell of a man. Answer. My fault, guys. Totally my fault. You know, we're not perfect here. We never were. We never will, but we're better than we used to be.
We're progress.
We're progress, not perfection, right?
as the engineers all give us all kinds of signals behind the glass. Everybody can see it.
Now, because I was giving him a lot of crap. Now, he's right to give it to me because I screwed up the order of the show.
And you just made him scramble to put on that music
back there. Look,
they're looking. They're giving us the bad eyes over here, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Unreal.
I have a couple more questions. We have a lot of questions, but let's talk about the legislatures who make the decisions, who make the laws in Pennsylvania. Are they starting to get it slowly but surely? Are they willing to – are some of them at least willing to be part of the solution? And I'm sure some of them don't care. I think across the board, right? Not just Pennsylvania. But across the board.
You know, I want to give legislators the benefit of the doubt in that when I've been in closed rooms with people who even seem like they're opposed from different parties, I often see people working together to try to fix things.
Great.
So, you know, even when they may be publicly opposed, you know, government is just like everybody else. There's a bunch of people in recovery in Congress. There are people in our General Assembly here in PA that are in recovery.
Yeah.
For all of your listeners out there, I'm going to bet that you have legislators in recovery in your legislative bodies too. So, and there are people who have been affected by their families.
Yeah.
So there are people who care. The challenge is when there's turnover, like right now we're entering a new administration. There's been changes in legislatures, not just here in PA but around the country. You end up trying to educate and figure out where those people are and how to move things forward.
Yeah. 1-888-728-9941 is our number here. 1-888-728-9941 is our number here. It's a great opportunity to speak with Bill Stauffer. As we said before, if you're listening and you want to watch, go to Facebook, go to our Clean and Sober Radio page, just like these folks. There's a long list. Let's start with, oh my God, Kathy Wolf Collin. Mike Hepp. Hey, buddy.
Mike.
Judge Christopher Maddox is watching. And he's a great judge, and you'll see why I'm saying that. Eddie Kay is watching. Eddie Kilgore is watching. Great guy. C. Ruger.
C.
Ruger says good afternoon. Linda Carroll is watching. And Judge Christopher Maddox, who follows directions, told us that he is from Drexel Hill, Pennsylvania. Mike Brill.
Mike.
Mike Burke. And our other famous and such a great judge, Judge Andrea Duffy, is watching us now. Hello, all. We got two judges.
I know. I was just thinking that.
Do you think that either one of those judges would have been friends of ours in the old days?
They would have had to show mercy.
They would have had to show mercy.
That's mercy on us.
That's right. Mike Burke from Media Pennsylvania. Happy New Year's. Todd Klotz. Question, we'll get to it. What's the view on harm reduction? We'll get to that. C. Ruger. Do they offer inpatient at Recovery Center, your place?
So we do not offer inpatient, but we have housing and partial hospitalization. So that's basically the next step down from inpatient.
Okay.
But we have housing, which they stay at their housing and then come to our place.
Okay.
but we work with local inpatient facilities for detox.
Okay, there's the answer. Steve Sussman. I think it's Dr. Steven Sussman, actually, from West Palm Beach, Florida. Let's do this. I think we are ready. Oh, just from Palm Beach. I'm sorry about that. Daquan Dudley, thanks for spreading message. Daquan Dudley from Wilmington, North Carolina. Let's take a break, and we'll be back with Bill Taffro. I mean, Stauffer. Bill Taffro was a program director in Philadelphia.
Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF now. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
Hi, this is Dion, the Wanderer. Listen to Clean and Sober Radio. You might hear something that'll change your life. Yo!
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
And we are back, Clean and Sober Radio, and Bill Stauffer has joined us, and Bill's the Executive Director of PRO-A, Pennsylvania Recovery Organization Alliance, which does really, you know, all kidding aside, and we're actually not kidding, you do such great work. You protect the recovery community. You also protect the people that are in addiction.
I think, you know, I listen to a lot of people. So I go around and listen to what's going on, and, you know, we're just trying to give people a voice in tables where they may not have them.
And, you know, you were saying, too, that I remember after COVID, you were driving around Pennsylvania and you were seeing that a lot of drug and alcohol facilities were closing. And my question for you is, are you still seeing this? Are you seeing the tides turn in the other direction at this point a couple years later where new programs are opening up, or is it still running looking bad?
I saw where we were losing some public-funded programs. We do see a lot of private investment dollars coming in. So in some ways, we have more capacity than we need, right? And in other areas, there's not enough capacity. And I think the larger problem is the turnover rate. You know, there's some studies coming out of Georgetown University, the O'Neill Institute, that show turnover rates in our field of over one-third, so closer to 40%. So the turnover rate of staff is so high that programs are having challenges meeting the needs that they have.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Also, what about pay for workers in this industry?
It's not a high pay industry.
It is not.
I've had workers in programs with master's degree helping their clients get jobs at warehouses and seeing their clients make more money than them on day one of their jobs. And that's rough. And not that we don't want the clients to have living wage jobs, but if you've worked your whole life to do a field and gone to school and invested in it, you deserve it. And you're taking, it's a really it's stressful work. It's very rewarding work, but there's a lot of responsibility. I don't think our workforce is paid for the responsibility they have.
How would that change come about?
It has to be funded more robustly. It simply does. We have to value treatment and recovery in ways that we simply have not in this society.
Where did you grow up, Bill?
I grew up in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
And I know you were a bad kid. I heard all the stories. If you want to give us some of them.
I wouldn't say I was a bad kid. I got into a lot of trouble.
Is that what it was? You were misguided, right?
It was a steel town, right?
And you stole. is that where you're going?
It was a steel production town, Bethlehem Steel, right?
Okay.
And at the time I was growing up, the steel industry was going down the tubes. All of our parents were losing their jobs.
Wow.
So, like, what was happening in the era that I grew up in is all those kids, we were getting into a lot of trouble. Our parents were more focused on how are they going to put food on the table.
Sure.
And it was an era where you could get away with more than that, I think, than now, too. So I survived that, and I got into recovery fairly young.
Okay, where did you go to school?
Liberty High School.
And then you went to college?
I didn't make it into college.
Okay.
I failed that. Actually, I was going for radio and TV design.
See, there's an example. Not everybody needs to go to college.
Well, I mostly didn't attend high school. Right? Mm-hmm. I skipped a lot of that, gave a half-hearted attempt at college, and my addiction took over, and I failed out of life fairly early. Mm-hmm. And I only went back to college when I got into recovery at age 21.
21.
Yeah.
So you got in. So how many years have you been sober?
38 years.
Amazing. Coming up on the big 4-0, huh?
Getting closer, yeah.
38 years.
And do you find this a huge part of kind of like it just inspired you to do this work? Because it's not easy. I know you're putting miles and miles on your car.
I think I do this for there's a lot of listeners out there in the field, and I think we have really similar reasons why we do this. I've seen a lot of people die as a result of addiction, and they're amazing people. And I just want to be part of the solution to help get more people into recovery. And that's why I got in this field. That's why a lot of people did this work, despite all the challenges.
You're recognized outside of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. You have spoken in front of Congress?
U.S. Senate.
Twice. U.S. Senate?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have a whole list here of stuff that you have done. It's really impressive. Are you ever sitting in front of the Senate and you're there doing your thing, you're totally respected, and you're thinking, what am I doing here?
You know, it is awe-inspiring. I'll say this. I'm 38 years in recovery, and most of the days of my life in recovery, I've gotten up and done what they tell you to do, is try to do the next right thing.
Yeah.
Learn something, go to school, do something like that. And so I do find myself in rooms that I would never believe that I would have had the capacity to find myself in. And I do feel that, but I also, you know, it's a responsibility to try to carry it off for the next generation. A lot of my work is on sharing recovery history and what our history means for the future, too.
Yeah, I know the feeling. I've been, you know, sworn in, you know, state boards and stuff like that, and I'm always like, I'm grateful, I'm proud of myself, but then there's that little thing in my head going, do they know who they're swearing in here? Do they actually know? Because it's the old tapes. I mean, we've been sober for decades and decades and decades. That's the old tapes, but they, at least for me, they seep in sometimes.
It's called imposter syndrome.
Exactly.
I also feel some pressure. Like if I make a mistake, it may mean that the next person doesn't get a chance. You know,
with what you do, that's right.
So I try to extra hard. And like when I spoke to the Senate the last time, when you get to do that, there's this thing where there's a clock that ticks down until their time runs out.
Yeah.
And then after your time runs out, it just turns red and moves in the other direction. And I didn't notice it. So I'm using more than my time. And the senators were really nice to me for a couple of minutes. And then they said, Mr. Stauffer, your time is over. And I realized I had burned up 5 minutes of Senate time.
So, that's awesome.
Look how nonchalant when you sit in front of the Senate. You see how he's talking like this?
And I'm curious on like what that's like going in to the Senate and sitting down before them. And they're almost up there like judges. I mean, what did that feel like for you?
I've done it twice. And, you prepare a lot for it. And you go with muscle memory. But you know, you don't also know what's going to happen. The last time I went there, it was on substance use in older adults, and it turned into a discussion of fentanyl on the border, right?
Because
that's at the time what the Senate was interested in.
You were invited, this is pretty cool, to complete a fellowship at the Hazleton Betty Ford Foundation in the summer 24. To look at their historical archives on addiction treatment, prohibition, all this stuff. So people reach out to you around the country because you have such an incredible reputation. That must be a great feeling.
I feel a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, to get things right. But what I've done is I've recognized we have a deficit in understanding our own history, and I've tried to pick up on the work of other people who have come before to make sure that that's there for the next generation. And, you know, what Hazleton Betty Ford has, and we used to have specialized libraries around addiction and recovery around the country, and most of them are gone. They have one of the few remaining, where you could go in there and there are librarians who are specializing in understanding what all the information is, the gray data, the periodicals, and we really need to preserve those.
I'm just wondering if you get a sense of the country as a whole. Are we going forward? Are we staying the same? Or are we sort of going backward? What do you think? And we're going to get the expert.
I was actually talking to somebody earlier today about this, and I was talking about the doctor's opinion, which in the big book is this doctor that had their opinion on alcoholism. I was thinking about the early doctors, and if you gave them a time warp and they were going to go from the 30s to 2024 and they were to look at that, we're losing over 100,000 people a year to drug overdoses, I think they would just be blown out of their mind that here it is almost over 100 years later and we're losing this many people.
You know, the alcohol-related mortality increased 25% during the pandemic, and it's not going down. We're not even counting that, right? So we don't even think about those as losses. You know, I would say this to your question. We're in a time of like a sea change, and there's a lot of really challenging things going on. It kind of feels to me in some ways like it's falling apart. Mm-hmm. It's also a view of history. When you look at our history, not only as a country, but in the field of addiction treatment and recovery, it's the falling apart where it comes back together, if that makes sense. Almost like the proverbial phoenix. Mm-hmm. It's when it comes apart that people can pull together and then move it forward in the next generation. It kind of feels like that to me right now. That's my opinion.
What do you think? You think we're making headway here, Gary?
I think in some ways we're making headway as far as educating the public. I think that we're making headway as far as the judicial system not penalizing the wrong people, meaning the users, as they used to. But I think, you know, in the last 70 years, other ailments, the treatments have progressed, you know, heart, diabetes, everything is – with this disease, it hasn't.
Yeah, and for me, until we get our head around – and you're starting to see the overdose rate come down a little bit. But as soon – until we get our head around like – the fatalities, right? And you know, lowering the fatalities from this thing, I feel like we're going in the wrong direction.
We are seeing carceral solutions coming back. We are seeing incarceration being viewed more favorably, so that concerns me. But what we have not done, and you know, a guy named Dr. Robert DuPont looked at the five-year care paradigm. It's like we should be measuring wellness long-term, not just did somebody complete 28 days of rehab, but were we able to sustain them in recovery for 5 years? That really should be the mark. That's the mark for cancer. Why isn't it for our condition?
Dr. DuPont,
yes,
as I understand it, served under two presidents as the drug czar.
He was, I think...
you know how I know that?
Nixon and Ford.
Bill told me that before.
Oh, I was wondering, I was like, who is this Dr. DuPont, right?
But it is amazing how most diseases or ailments have been dealt with in a different way than this one.
Yeah, and you know, somebody brought up harm reduction earlier.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and you got to wonder, like, do we need more of an element of this at this point, right? You know, to lower the fatalities, and harm reduction would kind of be that thing on how do we lower the negative consequences? Like, there's some people that are gonna be using, but how do we bring these consequences down from it? You know,
you have to keep people alive until they can get help.
Yeah.
So absolutely, harm reduction has a role here. But we should also be focusing on how do we get people better, not whether they went to rehab and did they stay sober for a week. But what can we do to have them stay sober for a year?
You know, this thing in San Francisco, if you don't get treatment, would that eventually come? If you have heart disease and you do not go to the doctor, they're going to take away your you're right.
It's a great point.
Never happened.
Yeah.
Never happened. Because so many people think that addiction, you caused it. You made it happen, and you shouldn't have. Not like other ailments that are in your body that are totally out of your control. You know?
Yeah, it's just...
Let me ask you guys a question. Yeah. So when I first started using, I had an extraordinary tolerance very quickly. to.
Uh-huh.
I could use a lot very quickly, more than people around me could, and I thought that was a really great thing. Yeah. Turns out it wasn't. You guys have experiences like that?
My tolerance was definitely steady and quick, but not like you're talking about. I know people like that. Are you talking with alcohol? You could just drink everybody under the table?
Yeah. And then it crashed later on. But early on, like I could, my body metabolized alcohol way faster than other people.
And you know, it's crazy. If you take a couple of kids and you put them out in the woods, and the alcoholic, the budding alcoholic, will be able from the beginning to drink everybody else under the table, you know, because their body is actually having such a strong reaction to the alcohol, their tolerance goes up right away.
So then it's genetic, right?
Yeah, that's the genetic part of it.
For some.
Yeah. For some.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can relate to that question. You know, it's taking them all day. I mean, just to keep whatever it was until it was no good. But yeah, if I was with other people, I was the one who I was the one who focused in on that all day long, anticipating having fun later on. If I did wait that long, but it was all. My whole day was focused on. I'm wondering if that energy being focused on getting it going, the doctors writing the prescription, had something to do with my tolerance. I think that some of the ailments that I have now have to do with the amount of pills I put in my body.
Could be.
Well, and not just that, the obsessive mind, right?
Yeah.
The obsessive mind. Yeah. I mean, you know, getting to that point where you're like, well, how do I enjoy things without this, right? How do I even function without it? And you said obsessing about when am I going to get high next, right? And you know, that's the disease concept of obsession of the mind, allergy of the body.
We have to mention two people who are watching us, or we're going to catch, can we say hell?
Yeah. I think we could say it.
Okay.
On here.
Mark Willig says, sorry I haven't been on in a while. I've been in a very bad way health-wise. We know that, Mark, and we know you're getting treated for it, and we absolutely wish you the best. You have many friends.
Thinking about you, Mark.
Yeah, we're all thinking about you. Lou Montana, what's up, gentlemen? Good to see you again. And is he from Philadelphia?
He's from Jersey, and he actually asked for our phone number, which is 1-888-728-9941. He's so burned, I'm going to give it twice.
Yeah,
sorry,
so
Lou.
888-728-9941.
Aren't we all, right?
Yeah, we are. We are. Yeah, call us. Anybody, call us. Everybody, anybody. Wait a minute. Let me see something. I had another lady here. Jean M. from Morgantown, West Virginia. We are here known as the opioid capital state. Is anything being done to combat this horrible label?
What do you think, Bill?
West Virginia.
I know that there were some attempts to make recovery cities in the state of West Virginia.
Really?
And so far they haven't worked. But like have a city where that was known for having a lot of recovery resources. Yeah.
Boy, West Virginia really...
They got crushed.
They're great people. I spent some time down there. They're really, really, they have a very strong community, a recovery community.
So yeah, my daughter went to school in West Virginia. It's a beautiful town.
And hopefully as time goes on and someday when we move away from opioids as this big drug of choice, right? Hopefully, you know, it'll kind of lose that reputation, right?
Well, we hope so, but... Are we all just fooling ourselves? I mean, I don't want to be negative, okay? We need to think positive. We're going to – hopefully the legislatures, they're going to understand. So we're going to have more treatment, more empathy, sympathy, new programs, easier access to resources. Hopefully.
It's so tough because it is so messy. That's all I think of when I think of the field right now. There's so many different branches. There's so much money involved now. There's so much – it's such a messy territory.
Well, that's why I like what Bill said.
Yeah.
Is it getting worse? Is it getting better? It's getting more complicated.
More complicated. It's a great way to put it.
But what we should never forget is that there are people every day getting into recovery.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to remember that, right? You got to keep that optimism.
That's right.
And that's all we can hang our heads on, right? It's some people getting one day. Right. And anybody listening out there right now, just know you can do it.
All right, guys, we have to take another break. We're with Bill Stauffer. And we'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
Hey, this is Mark Stein from the classic rock band Vanilla Fudge. Keep on rocking, and so good luck to everybody, and all the best.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, we are back. Clean and Sober Radio. If it's the first time you've found us, either on your radio, if anybody still has a radio, your phone, your computer. We've been doing this for 13 years. We're doing the show, Addiction and Recovery, and we're trying to send the message out that you don't have to live in an addiction. There are ways, there are resources, there are treatment centers. Be open-minded to that. I think we have a caller on the line.
Yes, we do. Got to call her. Lou, is that Lou?
Lou Montana, welcome to the show.
Thank you, brothers. Good to hear from you.
Long time, bro.
Yeah, he's been injured.
Oh, that's right.
How you feeling?
Yeah, I just had the last surgery on my hand Friday, so I'm doing good, right? I'm here.
What happened?
I tried to take on a pickup truck and I hit it head on.
What, were you on a motorcycle?
Yes, I was.
Oh, God.
Glad you're alive.
Oh, yeah.
Holy
it was
man.
Bad, right?
Yeah. So how bad were you hurt? What happened?
I crushed my lung. I broke four ribs, broke my hand, sprained ankle, right? Ripped all the skin off my arms. I could go on, right? I woke up in Cooper trauma.
You're lucky, right?
A weekend and, yeah, I'm lucky, right? I'm still here, and I'm going to tell you this, right, yeah. And all the listeners.
Yeah.
I didn't take one Percocet.
Oh, my gosh.
Not one.
Good for you. Let me ask something, Lou. Are you the guy that had his knee replaced and didn't use any pain medicine?
Both of them and a hip.
I mean, Lou is like the bionic man.
Listen, he's a great guy, Mark. But he sounds crazy.
I've been telling Lou, but Lou, before this accident, I was like, Lou, be careful on these motorcycles, you know? And Lou's just like, I just get on my bike and I ride. But this isn't going to stop you, is it?
Are you kidding me?
No. Was your bike ruined?
Oh, yeah, it was totaled.
What are you going to get now?
Yeah. I'm looking at electric glide.
Oh, yeah.
Are you going to slow down on the roads or are you still going to drive fast?
I'll plead the fifth.
He's pleading the fifth.
Plead the fifth,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, I think I would too to that. Well, I drive like a grandmother.
You know, my aunt used to call them murder cycles.
Really?
Yeah.
I never heard that.
Yeah.
That's pretty good, right?
You like that one?
But anyway.
Wait, Lou, did you have the helmet on?
Yeah, but it came off.
Oh.
Yeah, I tore my scalp open pretty good, right?
Wow.
It was bad. It was a bad accident. Right?
What date was it, Lou? When did you have it?
October 31st, Halloween. We all just stopped and had lunch, and a couple of us left the pack and said, we're going home. I wanted to go home and hand candy out to the kids, right?
Yeah.
Make it home. I've got a free helicopter ride.
Oh, my God.
And you know, amazingly, you didn't take one opiate with all that pain going on.
I mean, when I was in the hospital... Right, I did, but I told him 2 days before you feel like I'm going to be released, I want to be taken off, wean me off.
Okay.
Right? And they put me on the tramadol for the last 3 days, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, not one. I'll tell you this, though, right? My doctor called in a script, right? And my pharmacist called me, right? The doctor from the trauma center.
Mm-hmm.
And my pharmacist called me and said, Lou, we have a script here for you. By law, we got to fill it. but there's definitely a misprint. They have you taking 100 Percocet, 20 a day for the next 5 days.
Oh my God.
Breakfast, lunch, dinner, and bedtime, 4 Percocets at each one. There was supposed to be 20 Percocets, right? One, I guess, 4 a day.
Yeah.
One pill, one at breakfast, one at lunch, one at dinner, and last for 5 days. But I told her, I said, I didn't want it anyway, you know?
Did you tell the doctor in the hospital that you were recovering?
Oh, absolutely. Everybody knows. Yeah, that's the first thing I do, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All of them, they all know. See, even my pharmacist knew, and she was like, "Well, I know you because I'm an addict, right?" She didn't feel comfortable with that script. That's why she said, by law, I got to fill it, but I know it's a misprint, right?
Wow.
And I said, I don't even want it, so don't worry about it, right? Anyway, I'm still clean, right?
Yeah.
And I'm still sober, you know, and I still had a lot of support from the rooms, and that was the good thing, right? And everybody from NA and AA basically came to visit me, you know?
That's why it's so important to stay, to not isolate, but to be involved with your community.
Yep.
You know?
Absolutely. So that's the story today, right? I'm back. I'll be here every 3 o'clock on Friday.
Well, you better
God
be.
Willing, right?
Yeah.
I missed the show bad. I've been wanting to catch it, right? I finally got on here.
Hey, Lou, you have an extra dollar on you?
I sure do.
Good. Go to the website, cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com, and there's a PayPal button. And put your 20 cents in there, will you?
What's it? Clean and Sober. What is it?
Clean and Sober Broadcasting is our website. And there is a donate button. And that's where we're starting to promote. We need to get money in here to keep the show going.
Real?
Yeah, for real.
All right.
Yeah, for real.
So now how do I give you the money?
PayPal button. You hit that and use a credit card and you give it to us.
I sure will. In fact, Clean and Sober Broadcasting, right?
Yeah. 20 grand.
Clean and Sober Broadcasting, .com?
Yeah, .com. Mm-hmm. You'll see our website, Clean and Sober Broadcasting. And
all right, I think I can afford more than a dollar.
Well,
right?
Whatever. If you send a dollar, we will appreciate it, okay?
Got it, my friend.
Well, we wish you all the good health, and we hope that you're healing quickly.
Absolutely.
Right?
I'm going to do that. And I got less than 30 days to have 5 years clean.
Ah, beautiful. Amazing. Amazing. Are you going tomorrow night?
I'm going tonight to Merchantville. And then I was there last week. Where you been, Mark? You haven't been there.
No, I wasn't there last year. I was playing hockey with my kid, but I was there the week before.
All right, I'm going to let that one go because I am having neurological problems. From the
Oh, man.
But I think you better plead the fifth.
All right, man.
Hey, Lou, right, thanks for
have
being
a good day, man.
Thank you so much for being a big support and a friend of this show.
Thanks,
I love
Lou.
This show, man. I love you guys.
Love you,
you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Sounds like an incredible guy.
He really is.
He's been on a couple times, too. You know, great guy. And
he's a really... He's your buddy, right?
He's my buddy.
Did he work with you?
No, he didn't work with me. But he's got quite a story and one of these guys that just has really solid recovery.
Yeah.
Does all the stuff
you need to do,
you know, and had one heck of a story too.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, it's a great show. Bill, thank you so
Thanks
much.
Thank you, Bill.
Coming on
Always
here,
good to have
and
here.
Sharing your experience, your everything about you. And I know you are one hardworking dude.
Thank you. Really appreciate what you guys are doing. And it's amazing to see how this show has grown.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks. Well, it's because of people like you, you know?
I'll hit the donate button too.
Okay. All hit right. that donate button. 10 grand is the minimum. Okay. Well, anything after that is good. So I have to waste another minute or Tyler's going to start yelling at me. Hey, what are you doing this weekend?
So I am laying low. My son has a hockey game at 8:30 tomorrow morning. So I'm going to go freeze because it's outdoors and watch the hockey game. Go into my home group tomorrow night, Lou. And Sunday have a hockey game myself and my son. So playing hockey all weekend, basically.
All right, sounds good. Hey, everybody, remember, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, help is available. Please call 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-HELP. For Clean and Sober Radio, I'm Gary Handler.
I'm Mark Sigmund.
And we appreciate all the support we get from our audience. Have a great weekend, everybody.
To say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, I hope we pass the audition.